Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another edition of CMC Radio. I'm your host, Rob May. I hope everyone's having a good day so far. It's Wednesday, 6:30 p.m. here on the East Coast in New York. And as I mentioned, you know, it's we're halfway through the week already, and it's been a good week so far. It unfortunately started to rain today here in New York, but it's unseasonably warm, so we'll take it. Joining me today and tonight, I should say, is a good friend of the show, Samantha Anesta of Be a Sister to a Sister, a great organization, you know, trying to do some amazing things and really, you know, keep people, really spread the knowledge, I would say, of trafficking and women and the issues that face, you know, girls and women of all ages that go through a lot of different unfortunate and traumatic events. Who better to tell you about the company itself and the organization itself than its founder, Samantha Anesta. Samantha, welcome back to the show.
Hi, thank you.
All right.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
So my organization, Be a Sister to a Sister, our program is an aftercare program. What we do is we provide aftercare services for survivors. So what that means is that we provide extensive counseling, medical treatment, extensive legal services if need be, and anything they may need like housing, education, and those sorts of things. And we will also have focus groups. We have survivor networking, empowerment, survivor leadership, and we also provide accompaniment services for those survivors that that need to have the extra support for going to various types of appointments or even day-to-day activities.
Right, and the beauty of your organization is, Sam, is that you guys don't ever stop working with people. When they need it, you guys are there.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly, we do. But we're always there to assist someone who's in need, to take them somewhere, to even if it's just to talk to them. We're always there for them.
Absolutely. And the network that you guys have, that you work with, you know, mm-hmm. you take in people from every walk of life, from all over the globe, right? I mean, if people reach out to you, this is where they can come to.
Absolutely.
Now, I know that we've gone over it, but I do want to ask one more time about this. Mm-hmm. You know, in terms of finding people jobs, finding people the return to normalcy, do you guys help in that area too?
Yes, we do. We help to find them sustainable jobs where they can get a decent income. So, you know, they can pay their bills and pay their rent. So what we do is we try to find, you know, what they're interested in, what they like to do the most, and we try to find them a job that's within that interest. And even sometimes it might be something where they need to just gain some more skills, and we'll help them find the proper training to be able to gain those skills, to be able to go out into the workforce and work.
Sure. Now, I know that obviously and asking about the job and on the topic of making a survivor self-sustainable. What goes into that, you know, aside from obviously, you know, getting them back into that normalcy, getting them back into the job force? I mean, what else mm-hmm. goes into it?
Well, in order for a survivor to be self-sustainable, she has to be able to go out into the world, to understand the way the world works, and to not be dependent on the organization that has helped her get there. She needs to be able to make decisions for herself. She needs to be able to make practical decisions for herself. And she needs to be, for lack of a better word, she needs to be empowered and want to change and want to do that. And she needs to be encouraged to do that instead of, you know, kind of being told that, well, if you need this or you need that, just come to us and we'll just give it to you. You know, she needs to be able to learn how to do things for herself and not always
right.
have to rely on someone else to do it for her.
But now, you know, when you're looking for a job and stuff, and you know, when you're just mm-hmm. trying to get out there, I mean, how hard is it for someone to discuss that? And should they discuss it? I mean, how does that kind of work? I mean, does it help to get it out there?
Well, I mean, when a survivor is ready to work, they have to understand that, you know, there are certain things that employers look for. Some of them may need training on how to go on an interview. Some of them need to understand that, you know, when you get a job, you have certain days and certain hours, and you have to show up every day, and you can't just not show up because then you're not going to have the job for very long. And, you know, just to let them know that this is a big responsibility that they need to be ready to undertake. I wouldn't suggest pushing a survivor out into the workforce if they're not ready. Of course not, you know, but they need to be mentally ready to be able to do this. Otherwise, it's just going to fall apart on them.
Well, now, what are some of the things that you've seen or that you know of or heard of that, you know, can occur if somebody does go into the workforce too soon, you know, as a survivor of this?
Right. Well, one of the things that could happen is that they can have a mental breakdown. They could just start acting out, which is not something that you want. Or they can just simply not show up, which is really one of the most common things. They just don't show up, and then all of a sudden they reappear out of nowhere, and then they want to work and they expect to get paid. Meanwhile, they haven't been there for like a few weeks, you know, and then they're trying to beg for their job back, and they need to understand that it doesn't work like that. Once you get a job, you have to be committed to it. You go in every day of the days that you're there to work. You can't go in whenever you feel like it. And if a problem or an emergency occurs, you need to contact your employer and let he or she know that you won't be in this and this happens, you know. So those are some of the things that can happen. But the most common thing I've seen is that survivors just don't show up.
Very interesting. I mean, you know, I think it's easy to overlook that when you're when you know somebody, say, even, I mean,
right.
We all know someone that's been in this situation, right? I mean, it's pretty obvious.
Right. I mean, and then the flip side of that is you get a survivor that wants to work and they're there every day, and then they may not be treated very well. So there's the other side of the coin.
Well, I would guess, right, that don't people wear their damage, you know, on their sleeve sometimes? I mean, you can kind of tell when someone's been through something. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not necessarily a trafficking thing even at that point. It's just any sort of trauma, a lot of times people do
show. Right, absolutely. You know, and, you know, in order for them to be self-sustainable, they have to move beyond the trauma. And they have to move into a better place and not constantly live in the trauma. If you're constantly living in the trauma, you're never going to heal and you're never going to move forward. And that's just going to, in the end, it's just going to hurt that person. It's not going to hurt anybody else but that person.
Absolutely. I mean, and obviously we've discussed this. It's different for everybody, right? The healing time, the healing period. There's no telltale time period.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So what are the things, though, what are the things in your mind that will greatly improve the healing time?
Just basically working with a survivor, good counseling, you know, just really giving them good skills, working with them in the sense that helping them understand what the real world looks like and how it works. You know, a lot of the girls are very young, and so some of them are set in their ways because of what's happened to them. So I think there needs to be, in a lot of cases, there needs to be a lot of maturity that needs to happen. They need to sort of kind of grow up, so to speak, and they need to understand that they have to take care of themselves because nobody else is going to do it for them. You know, I mean, the program that they're in will help them for a time, but then after that, they're going to have to go out there on their own. So I think it's a constant thing of just, you know, giving them the counseling that they need, you know, mentoring them and just being there for them when they need it and just helping them to mature and grow up and be part of society and have a better life. Because if they are just, like, left by the wayside, or if they're just, you know, given a few little sessions and then they go away and they never come back, and all of a sudden they show up again, if there's no incentive for them to stay in the program, they're just going to go right back out to the streets.
Right.
You know, but at the same time, you want to do it in a way where that survivor is not tied to you. They should never be tied to you. There should be a point where they should be able to go out on their own, you know, make their money, pay their bills, take care of their kids. You know, there should be that time, and that's the goal that needs to be worked towards. Because if that goal is not reached, then that young woman is never going to move forward. She's never gonna let go of whoever it is that's helping her, and she's always going to be dependent on that person or that organization, and that's not really what you want.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, it sounds easier. I think it sounds easier said than done, you know, with something like this. I mean, and I know you put yourself in someone else's shoes in any situation and you think, oh, you know, I can get through that or I should get through that. But again, I mean, like you said, there's so much that goes into it that, you know, it's obvious that there's things that need to be done and people need a support system. And it's nice to know that there are groups out there like yourself with Be a Sister to a Sister. And again, for everyone that's just joining us now, with Samantha Inesta of BeASisterToASister.org. Please check it out. You know, you can see everything that they offer, the ways to contact them. You know, it's a very cool website too, Sam. I want to tell you, you know, I like how it lays everything out for you nicely. It tells you where you can donate. I love the fact that it gives you some of the laws and acts and the projects that you have coming up. I mean, things on the site are very well laid out, so it's a good, informative site. But before we get to something I want to talk about on the site, I want to discuss with you the importance of continued counseling as we're discussing the healing process.
Right. So continued counseling, I think, is the most important thing for a survivor because the continued counseling will also determine the length of time that they will need in the program because a lot of girls suffer different trauma. Some girls suffer more than others. So depending on their trauma will show the outcome of how long it will take for them to heal. So if they have, like, let's say 6 months of counseling, and that program is over, and they obviously need a lot more, and they're starting to slip back, that's not good. They need to have continued counseling. So, you know, like I said, it's different for every girl because every girl suffers different trauma. So the trauma will dictate the length of time that they need. But continued counseling is really a must because some of these girls, you know, there are going to be days where, you know, they're going to have flashbacks or something's going to happen and they're going to need someone to really talk it out with that knows them and understands them. And if they don't have that, it's, you know, they could relapse or just go into a really bad depression, and that's not something you want.
And when it comes to counseling, right, now, does somebody need to be, you know, how do you go about choosing a counselor?
Well, what it is that I have counselors that I work with from other organizations that I work with them to provide continued counseling. That's really what it is. And if they can't do it, I will find somebody else who will do it. You know, I will, you know, look to other organizations. I mean, if need be, I will try to find, you know, some sort of counselor that's even outside of an organization that has dealt with survivors of trafficking that is willing to counsel some of the girls because, you know, I mean, it's one thing to have support groups and focus groups of, you know, other survivors and other girls, but, you know, that's good for a time, but you still need to have a real counselor and a real social worker because there are just some things that a focus group is not going to be able to deal with.
Interesting. Yeah. You know, and again, I think that's one of the benefits of working with you, of reaching out to you guys, is definitely the abilities and the reach that you have. I mean, it's pretty obvious. Mm-hmm. Now, what do you guys do to get yourselves out there? I mean, obviously, you know, I know that you're on the program to help increase awareness, but what other things are you doing?
Well, there's, I guess, like what everybody else says, there's panel discussions, there's different events and things of that nature. There's radio show.
Yep.
There's There's other media publications. There's networking in other groups, all those types of things. And just networking in general and just, you know, handing out brochures and business cards and things of that nature.
Absolutely. And so and again, I want to bring this up because, you know, in my mind, it seems like government and police organizations would work hand in hand with somebody like you, with a group like yours. But is that necessarily the case?
Well, I mean, sometimes it is. I mean, you know, we're part of the Brooklyn DA Human Trafficking Task Force, and we are listed in their manual as an organization to reach out to, you know, girls who need, like, specialized services. So we basically, I mean, we work with law enforcement through there, but we work with more like detectives and vice. We don't really work with uniformed policemen. So that's sort of a different type of thing going on there. But, I mean, pretty much, you know, we've been working pretty well hand in hand in that respect.
Sure. Absolutely. And real quick, getting back to the matter of counseling, how sensitive should somebody be when they're dealing with somebody that's gone through this?
Well, I mean, again, it depends on the girl's, the young lady's story because, you know, a counselor has to be aware of her story and what she's been through depending on what her ordeal was. If it's a very, very hard story to listen to and she's been through a lot, obviously you have to be extremely sensitive and watch what you say because sometimes you just don't know what could trigger her. So I think it all depends on the situation that the young lady is coming from, you know, and what she's endured, I think, will dictate, you know, just how sensitive you could be or what you can or can't say to her.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, so you do have to be very mindful at that point.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Yeah. And in your experience, have you ever, you know, gone through, you know, working with somebody or had somebody tell you, you know, hey, I simply said the wrong thing and this is what occurred, and, you know, you kind of see like a relapse almost of the emotions?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, I have heard some, you know, somebody say something, you know, that they did not realize was something that they shouldn't have said, but it didn't turn out to be a catastrophic situation. I mean, I think that the young lady just let it roll off of her. She didn't really take it to heart, which was good for that person. But aside from that, I haven't really heard anything like that. I mean, I'm sure it happens.
Yeah.
I'm sure it does, but I haven't heard it myself.
Okay. And then moving on to the next topic, what is abolitionista? What is that?
Oh, yes. Okay, so abolitionista is a new concept that has been put out by the Freedom Ladder organization. So it is manga. Manga, I believe, is like a Japanese style of comic book. I'm really not into it myself, but I'm learning. Abolitionista is basically a manga comic book that teaches and educates young people about sex trafficking. And it is a really cool comic book. From what I'm told, manga is still very, very popular. So a lot of young people really love it. So what Thomas does is Thomas goes to different communities and schools, and he basically introduces the comic book to the kids, and they just talk about it, you know. They go through the book and they talk about the different scenarios, and he basically educates them on the issue of sex trafficking. So the characters in the book, they're very young, they're young girls. There's a lot of very realistic scenarios that are happening about, you know, how it occurs, how it happens. He's also added the whole thing of when they go and look for the young woman, they find her on Backpage.com, which is a very common thing. Whenever a young woman is missing, you know, and they think she's been taken for sex, the first thing they do is look on Backpage.com, and sure enough, she pops right up. So that's another very realistic thing. So it's a really good tool to educate you know, young boys and girls, and it's, you know, it's very catching because, again, you know, he's using something that's very popular with the younger generation to get their attention to this issue, which I think is really a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, his organization is freedomladder.org, and with this particular comic, I know that he's translating it into multiple languages. I think he also has it translated into Spanish already, but that you'd have to get online at abolitionista.org. So if anyone is interested in just taking a look at it, it's really very interesting. And I know he's in the process of translating it, I think, to like Russian and a few other languages. So I think it's a pretty cool thing, and it's a very interesting tool to reach out to young people. I think it was very creative. I've never seen anything like it before. So I just wanted to mention that.
I think that's a very cool. I think that's an incredible concept. That's a really cool thing. And that can be found at freedomladder.org.
Yes, freedom. Well, actually, that's his organization. The comic book is at abolitionista.org.
Okay. Very interesting. And so, Sam, you know, is it stuff like this that makes you happy, at least, that, you know, it is, there are things like this out there for people to get their hands on?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's a good thing. It's just that, you know, I feel like not everybody knows about it. I think a lot of these things need to be more accessible, and I truly believe that human trafficking should be part of school curriculum. I really think that it should be. I think they need to find a place for it, and they need to educate young people about it, because this is something that is definitely out there. It's a part of life. I don't know what subject they're going to put it in, but they need to put it somewhere, because these kids need to get educated, and they need to know what's out there. Because, I mean, there's a lot of these great tools. It's just that I think that teachers need to be aware that these tools are out there, and they need to start using these tools and teaching these kids about human trafficking, because it's a part of everyday life. I mean, if they want to keep the kids safe, they have to teach them. They have to tell them what's out there. It's not just about, oh, you know, don't take candy from strangers or go home with strangers. It's not just about that anymore. It's something more insidious and more sinister, and it needs to be taught in every school. It needs to be part of the curriculum.
Mm-hmm. Sure. No, absolutely. You know, we always go over this and we always say the same thing. It's like, you know, pop culture, mm-hmm. media, the portrayal of women and certain things, and, you know,
right.
When will it change? Who knows when it'll change? It'll change when people don't accept it anymore. But the problem is that it's always glorified, and that's just kind of, unfortunately, the way it is.
Right. Well, because
you know,
there
who knows?
So many things out there that are acceptable when they shouldn't be.
Right. Well, you know, the other side of it is that, you know, people are making money off of this type of entertainment
that's
and whatever else, and
mm-hmm.
and that's
mm-hmm.
yeah, that's the problem. So, Sam, as we're winding down to the final 6 or so minutes here of tonight's show,
mm-hmm.
I want to ask you, because mm-hmm. you've put up some pretty interesting blogs on the site, and
mm-hmm.
I do want to ask you about your most recent one, the Syrian
mm-hmm.
refugee crisis and trafficking. Obviously, the crisis is enormous, and it is a global.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely got a global effect. So, I mean, and I didn't even think about trafficking at that point. You know, when I first heard about the Syrian refugee crisis happening, and you know how you know, people, they were just everywhere at this point. You know, just trying to get
mm-hmm.
out of there. I did not even think about it, and maybe that's the problem, is that, you know, people
mm-hmm.
sometimes often overlook the trafficking side of things. So how does that play into
Absolutely.
This whole thing?
Well, I mean, you have thousands, if not millions, of people moving across borders, and, you know, everybody is just trying to get out of Syria. The reality of it is that a lot of the people that you see on boats are mostly the men and the boys. And I know there's been a lot of images of, like, children being washed up on the shore, and it's always a little boy, you know, and people are like, well, they had, you know, wife, they had a sister, how come you don't see them? What happened to them? The reality of it is they were not on the boat because they could not sustain that type of journey. That's why you always see the men on the boat that are coming over to the shores of Turkey, you know, Lebanon and whatnot. But what's happening is the women that are left behind are starting to become victims of trafficking by groups like ISIS. The women are being sold, they're being married, they're being raped, they're being tortured. And again, no one is really looking at this because everybody's worried about the refugee crisis and they're also worried about ISIS. You know,
right.
And that is a really big problem. I mean, even if you look at, you know, because I know ISIS has been enticing a lot of young women in other countries and they're running across borders to go marry an ISIS fighter or help to, you know, to fight the fight. But what's ending up happening is these girls are just, they're being married, they're being sold, they're being raped. And then, you know, when they try to get out, they find themselves trapped. They can't get out. Some of them lose their lives and some of them actually succeed in getting out. But it is a very serious issue, and you know, and it's happening. I mean, I would think in the Zaatari camps in Jordan. I mean, you get all these displaced Syrian refugees and all the women out in these refugee camps. I mean, it's not unthinkable to think that something might be happening there to them. You know, there's really not that much security. I mean, I'm sure a lot of young women can't even walk around the camp by themselves, especially at night. So, you know, it's just really not a safe place for them at all.
You know, it's the craziest thing to me about it is like you said, it's almost as if we forgot or forget that this is occurring.
Mm-hmm.
So you have this massive crisis, but you don't understand what else is going on in the world. I mean, it's you're blindsided almost by you know, obviously, and I'm not saying that. That obviously, you know, the terrorism side of things, you know, it strikes fear into everybody. And we don't want people here, and you don't want people that could possibly be affiliated with ISIS and all this other stuff. But really, you know, we forget about the women, the children that are disappearing, that are going somewhere else. And it's you know, the question for you, I mean, you know, what do you do? What do you try to do? How do you remember what's happening?
Well, the thing of it is that, you know, they're saying that a lot of the ISIS supporters are actually already here in the United States,
right.
That it's not ISIS that's coming in. And, you know, they're trying to support them any way they possibly can. I mean, listen, gangs here in the United States traffic young girls and they rape them. They do the same thing. They're not that much different than ISIS when it comes to trafficking women and girls.
Right.
You know. So it's not unconscionable to think that, you know, whatever ISIS fighters or whatever or ISIS supporters that are here, that they won't try to do the same thing, you know. I mean, it's not unthinkable that they would try to do something like that. You know, I mean, I understand that it's a big issue and it's a big world crisis, but there needs to be some special attention paid to what's happening to these women and girls and these young children. It just has to be. You can't solve one part of the puzzle and leave the rest of it unsolved. It's just never going to work.
Sam, I got to ask you, what got you into this? What was it? Was there something? And unfortunately, we only have about a minute and 40 seconds left in the show tonight, but hopefully we can cover it again on the next show. What occurred, you know, or not what occurred, but what made you follow this path?
It was something that was brought to me as I was doing consulting work with different nonprofits because my heart and passion was always for human rights, but I didn't know where it was going to land. And when I started working on this issue, it really started to speak to me. And it's also a global issue, which was something that spoke to me because I knew that whatever I was going to do was going to be on a global scale. So that's what brought me closer to this. And this ties into everything, as we see now, it's tying into terrorism, war, conflict.
Yeah.
Everything comes down to a war on a woman's body.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and that's very commendable. You know, and it's a lot. I'll say that. I mean, it's a lot for me to think that you take on and the work that you have to you know, try to do. And I know it's probably feels like an uphill battle a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately for tonight, we are running out of time. I do want to thank you for coming on to the show, as always. And we're going to talk to you again for next show. And everyone, please check out BeASisterToASister.org. You know, get involved. And, you know, I hope everyone has a good night. And again, Sam, thank you for coming on.
Thank you. Thank you.
All righty. From everybody here at CMC Radio, this is Rob May saying we'll see you soon. Have a great night, everybody.